Hello. Thank you for joining me for this activity. I am Dr. Pinkal Desai. I would like to take this time to share with you some promising new data in the treatment of AML, or acute myeloid leukemia. The treatment landscape for AML is rapidly evolving, with a multitude of therapies across various patient populations. But for today's discussion, I will focus specifically on agents that have received breakthrough therapy designation by the FDA. So let's begin. Before I move on to the treatments, let us go over to the current cure rates of AML. This slide divides patients into intermediate, high, and favorable risk profile. And you can see that patients with a favorable mutational risk profile or a favorable cytogenetic risk profile have a long-term cure rate of 60 to 80%. But patients who have an unfavorable cytogenetic profile or an unfavorable mutational risk profile do not have good benefit from currently available treatments, and the long-term survival is about 10 to 15%. The intermediate category falls somewhere in the middle with a 40% long-term survival. This is what we have, and this is what we are up against in trying to get better treatments and better survival for patients with AML. Unfortunately, most patients with AML do not have favorable risk profile and fall in the intermediate or unfavorable risk profile. When we talk about goals of treatment of AML, it depends on age and to some extent their performance status. If you have a young patient who is under 60 years old, the goal is to induce remission and then consolidate with either chemotherapy or a stem cell transplant with the ultimate goal to cure the disease. The consolidation with chemo or stem cell transplant is dependent on the risk profile of the patient. If you have a fit elderly patient that is over 60 years old, the goal again is to induce remission and consider a stem cell transplant in selected patients. We can routinely perform stem cell transplant now up to age 75, but patient selection is important. If it's an unfit elderly patient, you do want to induce remission, and big thing is to maintain it, because that's what really improves overall survival in these patients. There is a focus on improving quality of life as well, but I would pause here and say that there have been multiple trials that have shown that if you have an elderly patient who does not have a good performance status, if you treat the patient, then they do enjoy a better quality of life and better survival rather than just doing palliative care or transfusions alone. So these are patients that are absolutely somebody you should consider clinical trials on. The current landscape of treatment of AML for young patients include treatment with 7N3 or cytarabine and idarubicin or daunorubicin, which is given in the inpatient setting with approximately 4-week hospitalization. There is usually a bone marrow biopsy that is done somewhere in day 14 to 21 to assess for response. If the marrow is ablated at that point, then you wait for the patient to recover their counts, and at that point, we would do another bone marrow biopsy that would confirm remission. If there is residual disease on the bone marrow biopsy that is done in the middle of the cycle, there is consideration for reinduction if the patient is able to handle another dose of the chemotherapy. Once remission is complete, it depends on what the risk profile of the patient is. This risk profile is based on molecular analysis and cytogenetic subgroups. If there is a patient with good risk AML, then the plan is to consolidate chemotherapy with high dose or intermediate dose cytarabine. And if it's intermediate and high risk AML, there's an absolute consideration for an allogeneic stem cell transplant. In the older AML patients, the landscape is a little bit more varied. If you have a fit elderly patient, induce remission with chemotherapy and then consider a stem cell transplant. In the unfit elderly setting, there are couple agents that have been used. The first one is hypomethylating agents, which is decitabine or 5-azacitidine. The second agent is low-dose cytarabine. There are palliative care options also, which would include either transfusions or hospice care or clinical trials with novel agents and targeted therapy. In general, these lower intensity treatments, which include both decitabine, 5-azacitidine, and low-dose Ara-C, they have to be repeatedly given. It takes several cycles to achieve a remission. And there has to be some kind of maintenance on an ongoing basis because the disease tends to come back quickly if you stop treatment after a remission. But overall, these are well tolerated. Then there is a whole category of biologically adverse disease. So even if patients are fit, certain bad cytogenetic groups like complex karyotype or TP53 mutations, these patients don't enjoy a good survival or CR rate with intensive chemotherapy. In that case, hypomethylating agents seem to be doing the same job with much less toxicity, but still you can consider intensive therapy if the goal is to go into a stem cell transplant and achieve a quick remission. And obviously with the biologically adverse groups, clinical trials with novel agents is a big help. This slide is sort of the sombering picture of patients who are even considered fit and elderly. These are five big clinical trials with thousands of patients over 55 years old, treated with intensive chemotherapy of some kind. And if you see that the complete response rate are about 50% with an early death rate of 7 to 25%. While on the surface, as a remission rate of 50% sounds fine, the overall survival, which is about 3 to 5 years out from disease, is only 10 to 15%. So these are people who are considered chemotherapy eligible and yet do not survive for long. So there we are. Now we can begin our discussion on the breakthrough therapy designated drugs. With this kind of background and picture of AML, we obviously need newer agents. Today, I'm gonna talk about CPX-351, midostaurin, which is a FLT3 inhibitor, AG221, which is an IDH2 inhibitor, venetoclax, a BCL2 inhibitor, and an HDAC inhibitor, presinostat, in combination with 5-azacitidine. Before we move on to the actual drugs, I would like to point out that the FLT3 mutated patients make up for about 31% of AML. FLT3 TKD mutation is about 11%, and the IDH 1 and 2 are 14% and 19% respectively. The first drug, which is CPX-351, there was a big phase 3 study that randomized patients who are older with newly diagnosed high-risk AML to either CPX-351 or 7N3, which is considered the standard. These patients were 60 to 75 years old with good performance status and able to handle intensive therapy. Patients who had either therapy-related AML, a previous history of MDS, or high-risk cytogenetics were randomized on this trial. They got induction 1 to 2 cycles, and people who were in CR were able to go for more consolidation cycles for additional 1 to 2 cycles and followed long-term. The primary endpoint of this trial was overall survival. And here are the results. CPX-351 achieved a CR, or complete response, in about 47.7% of patients compared to 33.3%, which would be the 7N3 arm. The overall survival was superior to 7N3, and so was the 60-day mortality, which was 13% versus 21% in 7N3 arm. There was no overall difference in the grade 3 or 5 adverse events, and I would like to pause and say here that this drug, CPX-351, has been the only drug in decades of AML treatment that has shown overall survival benefit to chemotherapy with 7N3. In terms of safety and toxicity, the drug is obviously a chemotherapy. CPX351 is a combination of both daunorubicin and cytarabine just suspended in a liposomal formulation. So the side effects are expected to be that of chemotherapy. You do see febrile neutropenia, pneumonia, hypoxia, the same kind of toxicities you would expect from chemotherapy. But patients do not lose their hair generally. The next molecular targets would be FLT3, IDH2, BCL2, and HDAC inhibitor. Let's move on to the first drug, which is a FLT3 inhibitor. FLT3 ITD, or internal tandem duplication, is present in about 1/3 of AML patients. And this is a mutation that is important in hematopoietic stem cell survival and proliferation, generally associated with aggressive disease, a high white cell count, and increased relapse rate and worse survival. There's two kinds of mutations, internal tandem duplication and tyrosine kinase domain mutations. There are certain drugs that can work against one and not the other. For example, sorafenib can work against FLT3-ITD but does not work in the TKD mutations. The drug that we're going to discuss, midostaurin, is active against both kinds of mutations. The RATIFY clinical trial was a randomized phase 3 trial that enrolled 18 to 60 years of age with FLT3 mutated AML. Both FLT3-ITD and TKD mutations were allowed to enroll, and patients were randomized to receive chemotherapy with 7N3 in combination with midostaurin or placebo. Midostaurin was given at 50 milligrams twice a day, day 8 through 21 of the cycle, and the placebo was given on the same schedule. Once patients achieved a CR, four cycles of consolidations were allowed. This included high-dose cytarabine in combination with midostaurin or placebo. And then once the consolidation cycles were complete, maintenance was given for about an year at the same dosing. Patients who are eligible for a stem cell transplant could transition out after achieving a CR into a stem cell transplant. The primary endpoint was overall survival, and the results were actually not censored for a stem cell transplant. This slide shows the survival benefit of midostaurin over placebo arm. The top two curves are for patients who have a FLT3 TKD mutations, and the bottom two curves are for patients who have a FLT3 either a low allele or a high allele frequency. And you can see that the midostaurin arm outperformed the placebo arm in all three subgroups. When we look at response rates, the response rates to 7N3 alone and in combination with midostaurin was not necessarily different. But if you look at the four-year overall survival, the midostaurin arm showed a 51% four-year overall survival compared to 44%, which was statistically significant. There was no difference observed in the overall response rate of grade 3 or higher adverse events. And the drug-specific things that we did see was exfoliative dermatitis, general GI side effects in terms of vomiting, sometimes diarrhea. But there was no difference in treatment-related deaths. Now we move on to the IDH2 inhibitors. The IDH2 mutations were first identified in gliomas, and this is a very interesting mechanism of action that these mutations cause in an excess of 2-hydroxyglutarate instead of the alpha-ketoglutarate, which is the normal Krebs cycle enzyme metabolite, and an excess of 2-hydroxyglutarate causes increased proliferation signals, and it's considered an oncogenic metabolite. The IDH mutations are associated with NPM1 mutations and generally predict a worse survival in patients with AML. AG221, or enasidenib, was tested in a phase 1-2 trial where patients with advanced hematologic malignancies got 28 continuous cycles of the dosing. The dose was a range of 50 to 650 milligrams, and patients that were included were relapsed refractory AML over 60 years, untreated AML patients who were not eligible or declined standard of care, or other hematologic malignancies like MDS. The phase two portion of the drug included the dose of 100 milligrams, which was given as a continuous treatment cycle. The median age of these patients were 68 years. The most common side effect that was encountered was GI, mostly nausea, about 18%, and hyperbilirubinemia, 19%. Now, of note, this hyperbilirubinemia is actually indirect hyperbilirubinemia, and it's not really related to any synthetic dysfunction, but more to the presence of a UGTA1 enzyme deficiency and of no consequence in terms of toxicity to the patient. The overall response rate in this trial was observed to be about 37% with a CR of 18 and a PR, which is partial response of 11%. The one very specific thing that we see in this drug is something called a differentiation syndrome, in which the white cell count goes up and the patients experience sometimes pleural effusions, shortness of breath, and it's associated with the transition of changing the blast into more mature cells. It is not observed in everyone, but when it is observed, sometimes it does require steroid or hydroxyurea to control the counts. Very rarely interruption of the drug, but this is a specific side effect that has to be differentiated from progression of disease and requires a little bit of experience with this. The overall response rate, as I had earlier mentioned, is about 37%. And in a relapsed refractory population, this response rate is not minor. In general, the untreated AML patients obviously had a higher response rate of about 42%. We would now move on to venetoclax, which is a BCL2 inhibitor. As you know, BCL2 is an anti-apoptotic protein, and venetoclax, by inhibiting BCL2, increases apoptosis in combination with other agents. Venetoclax is approved for treatment in CLL and is currently undergoing clinical trials for AML. When venetoclax was combined with hypomethylating agents in elderly patients, these trials basically included patients 65 years and older with adverse or intermediate risk cytogenetics who are not eligible for standard induction therapy. 15% of these patients had a previous hematologic malignancy, MDS or myeloproliferative disorder, and they obviously had to be hypomethylating naive. Drug combinations were basically looked at with both in combination with decitabine and azacitidine. 400 milligrams and 800 milligrams of venetoclax was given in this combination. The hypomethylating arms were given regularly like they are scheduled. Venetoclax was given continuously unless there were some dose interruptions that needed for toxicity. The overall response rate, which include a CR, CRI, and partial response, was 50% in the 400 milligram arm and 83% in the 800 milligram arm for decitabine, and the same numbers for azacitidine looked very promising as well. In terms of toxicity, the major side effects that were seen was nausea, diarrhea, and peripheral edema. Obviously, febrile neutropenia, which is expected in any treatment with AML, was also seen on trial, but at not a higher rate than what's expected. Now, how about combination of venetoclax and low-dose Ara-C? Because clearly some patients would have received hypomethylating agents in the past. So for this subgroup of patients, not that they were solely included, but a lot of these patients on this trial had prior hypomethylating agent use. They obviously had a good performance status, not eligible for induction chemotherapy, and a lot of these people, about 38 to 60% of patients, had a previous hematologic disorder depending on what arm. The overall response rate with the 600 milligram was 75% compared to 30% with the 800 milligram arm. So I think the 75% was obviously better with the 600 milligram arm, and this is the dose that's going on to further phase 3 trials. It is very important to know that in this older population with the previous use of hypomethylating agents, CR rates of about 70% have not been the common knowledge in other treatments. So this is obviously a very promising combination and something that is hopefully successful with further clinical trials. The last drug that I would focus on is presinostat in combination with 5-azacitidine. This was a phase 2 trial where patients who were 65 or older with de novo or secondary AML but no previous exposure to hypomethylating agents were treated with 5-azacitidine given on a regular schedule with presinostat given orally 3 times per week, and the cycles were repeated until CR is achieved and then maintained for further follow-up. Primary endpoint was response rates with secondary endpoints of overall survival. If you look at the response rate here, the CR rate to the overall population was 42% with a cytogenetic response rate of 52%. The overall survival was 19.4 months, which is not minor. Side effects were expected. The febrile neutropenia and cytopenias are normal in patients with AML. In terms of non-hematologic toxicities, most of the side effects were GI, nausea, constipation, diarrhea, but they were all reasonable and patients tolerated the treatment overall well. So now that we have discussed these treatments, how would the new landscape in AML look like if these agents go through? In young patients who are FLT3 negative, 7+3 is still the standard of care. In a FLT3 positive population, midostaurin plus 7+3 would be a combination. In fit elderly patients with high risk AML, CPX351 would make a dent. If they're not high risk, however, 7+3 would still be considered in these patients. In an unfit elderly population with prior hypomethylating use, venetoclax and low-dose Ara-C is an option. With patients with no prior hypomethylating use, it could again be venetoclax and low-dose Ara-C or hypomethylating background with presinostat and also obviously the venetoclax with HMA treatment would be an option. In patients who are IDH mutated, the IDH inhibitors are also gonna be very important and probably more frontline. Now, the slide kind of shows that what I discussed are the 5 breakthrough therapy designated drugs, but there's several of these drugs in combinations with hypomethylating agents, chemotherapy, or single agents that are still gonna come forward. And what is important is what is the right combination? Can you combine some of these chemotherapies like CPX with targeted treatments? What is the right partner for targeted treatments? Can you combine 2 targeted treatments like venetoclax with other pathway inhibitors like idesanutlin and cobimetinib, which are MEK inhibitors? And if there are 2 targetable mutations, which one to choose first? I think clinical trials are a key to find the right combinations. This brings me to the last slide. This paper shows that cytarabine is a useful agent in the treatment of acute leukemia, and this was published decades ago. And the truth is that there have not been any major approvals in AML since this, and now I'm hopeful that it is time to move on, and with all of these agents coming forward, the treatment of AML will look very different. Thank you for viewing this activity.